Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Investments. Complicated? Not when you talk to a financial broker about a Zurich investment plan.
The former SDLP leader and Nobel laureate John Hume, a key architect of the Northern Ireland peace process and the 1998 Belfast Agreement, was laid to rest this afternoon following Requiem Mass in St Eugene's Cathedral in Derry. Many tributes were paid from Pope Francis, the Dalai Lama, Bono, President Bill Clinton and the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. The principal celebrant of the Requiem Mass, Father Paul Farran, said, "Make no mistake about it, there are people alive today who would not be alive had it not been for John's vision and his work." Philip Boucher-Hayes was there for Drive Time and he joins me now. Philip, not the send-off that Derry wanted to give John Hume, but not without significance.
Very much the case, Mary. They say that less is more, and I think that's what happened here today. The very fact that it was so pared back and that it was short of all of the usual pomp and circumstance that we afford to public figures on occasions like this made it all the more meaningful. He was, as you possibly saw, buried in a wicker casket in what I understand was literally the next available plot in Derry City Cemetery. Most cemeteries will find a plot befitting of a statesman, but not so. For the Humes, in accordance with John Hume's feelings on the subject, it was the next available plot that he was given. So, on one level, the city was certainly outwardly muted. There was no real sense of occasion. But person after person that I talked to said, if this is the way that the Humes want it, well then, it's up to us to honour that, and in so doing, honour John Hume. For instance, I called into Quigg's florists to see had any celebrities who weren't able to travel opted to send flowers up to the cathedral. They told me in the florists, no, that once again the family had headed people off of the pass there and indicated that if anybody did call trying to book flowers, send flowers up, that they were going to be redirected to make a donation to the hospice, and that the only flowers that they were doing that day was 150 red rose lapel pieces for members of the SDLP. So there was no lengthy political eulogies, very little in the way of celeb spotting throughout the Requiem Mass today, but the whole city was, and you know what, probably the whole country, if social media is anything to go by as well, was in the thrall of this moment.
And there were messages from dignitaries that reminded you that this was no ordinary funeral.
Yeah, absolutely. The ceremony was, for the most part, very liturgy-based. There was very little of it in of a secular nature, in spite of the fact that you had President Michael D. Higgins, Taoiseach Micheál Martin, First Minister Arlene Foster, Michelle O'Neill, Simon Coveney, and so on, and many of the celebrated leaders of Northern Ireland's civil rights movement, like Martin Canavan, people like that. Only about 120 of them dotted around the inside of the cathedral, but it was a religious ceremony. But just before the liturgy began, Father Paul Farran read some messages from dignitaries who wanted to be there but were prevented from travelling, like this one from a fellow Nobel laureate.
"I am sorry to hear about the passing of John Hume. I would like to offer my condolences to you and to the members of the family. I was pleased to be able to meet John during one of my several visits to Northern Ireland. Indeed, his deep conviction in the power of dialogue and negotiations in resolving the problem in his homeland has been an example of non-violent resolution of issues. It was his leadership and his faith in the power of negotiations that enabled the 1998 Good Friday Agreement to be reached. His steady persistence set an example for all of us to follow. Although my fellow Nobel laureate is no longer with us, his message about peace and non-violence in the resolution of conflict, no matter how protracted and difficult it may seem to be, will long survive him. He lived a truly meaningful life. With my prayers, yours sincerely, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama."
As you were saying, Philip, for the most part, people did stay away in accordance with the family's wishes that the funeral not become an occasion for an outbreak. But I suppose it was inevitable that some people gathered.
Of course they came, Mary. In the main, when they did come, they were very mindful of the distancing requirements. I was particularly struck, of all of the people that I ended up talking to this morning, I was particularly struck by this man, Ned Furlong, who had been so impressed by John Hume when he was alive, it sounded like nothing would keep him away.
"Trip. Where have you come from?"
"Wexford."
"For today?"
"Just, we left home this morning at 20 minutes past four. this man and myself in that whole 1995 Jeep there. He was such a passionate and believed so strong in what he was about. And he was a lone fighter for years. Most people thought he was away with the fairies, trying to bring peace to these two communities in this city. And sure, worked so well, like, but it was down to him and nobody else.
And did you see that? Did you understand what he was doing at that time?
Not really, until I got a bit older and started to study it and, what would I say, understood it more, like. He was, that's why we're here. He was so passionate about what he was at.
You must really have had a high regard for this man.
I was at home the other night looking at the television and there was tears coming down my eyes. The fact that he was so passionate about what he was at, like, the world would be well a better place if there was more people like him. Like, his, what would you call it, strategy or his idea, his thinking, sure, it's been the kind of thought of now all over the world, like. All these mad people that are fighting over nothing, and they'll say, when it happened in Northern Ireland, they got peace, it can happen anywhere on the planet. That's my belief.
Also among the mourners, Mary, was a man who came to Derry from Ethiopia as a refugee in 1984. He had an absolutely fascinating personal story because in spite of all that John Hume would have had on his plate at that time in 84, he took this man, Mahari Kadeni, and five fellow Ethiopian refugees under his wing, and he used to bring them on drives out to Malin Head.
John Hume looked after us all the time.
From where did you come?
Ethiopia, from Ethiopia. He looked after people. He's a good man. But he took us, first time we came here, he took us Mobile, Malin Head. He took us big hotel over there. He got us dinner, pay us dinner long time ago. I never forget that story, you know. We came refugee from Ethiopia, six people, you know.
And he personally took all six of you
under
his wing.
That's right, yes. He told us, don't worry, we stay here because your country is very bad for a minute. Because 1984, a lot of people die, liberation, you know, fighting like Syria, you know.
Did you realise when you met this man who took you around the place and looked after you, how important he was in Derry?
Of course, important. It's a new life, you know, the answer. This man's only a good man for people, always fighting, making peace. You know, he don't fight in his own bucket, he fighting, making peace all the time. We don't need this one piece.
That really is the measure of the man, Philip. What about those attending the ceremony today in an official capacity? What did they say to you about John Hume?
It was really interesting, Mary. A theme emerged really quite organically of passing the torch to the next generation. Michelle O'Neill, the Deputy First Minister Sinn Féin leader, said as she arrived that she was struck by Ian Paisley, Martin McGuinness and now John Hume having all disappeared from the scene. So it was now up to what she called the post-Good Friday Agreement generation to just get on with the job. And this was a thought that Simon Coveney, who was deputising for the Tánaiste, also picked up on.
Our generation, and you know, Michelle and Arlene and I are all a similar age. And I think in many ways, what we've been hearing and reading over the last few days of John Hume, and you know, last night I stayed here last night, and I had a lovely moment. I'm very friendly with Father Paul Farron, who's the priest here, and at midnight last night we went into the cathedral and said a quiet prayer, and John's coffin was there, and it was certainly a reminder to me of the power of John Hume as a personality, but also as a carrier of a message that my generation of politicians now needs to deliver on, and we will.
And Mark Durkin too, Mary, the man who took over as SDLP leader from John Hume, who has himself passed on the reins of leadership to another generation within the party, told me, as the bells tolled in the background, of what he thought John Hume would have said was required now of this next generation.
We may be in John's spirit, we need a sort of a renewal review of the agreement. And I would hope that a lot of the recognition that was freely and generously expressed by many people who had deep differences with John in the past and had a lot of doubts about the process and even had doubts about the agreement, the generous way in which they've spoken, maybe could incentivize us all to say, well, look, there's more that we can be doing with this now, because John never believed that would be achieved in his time would be the last word. He always believed that it was going to be up to each generation to write its own chapter of history. His job was to make sure that future generations weren't burdened with all the repeat failures from the past.
Mark Durkin there, ending that report from Derry by Philip Boucher-Hayes. And still to come,